This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
GDP where they thought it would be.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as we begin the trading day. Jobless claims seeing some slide. And how are the big banks doing? First, where's Wall Street? Numbers are down right now. The S&P down about 0.5%, the Dow about 0.25%, and the NASDAQ down about 0.7% right now. European shares mixed. The German DAX is down. Asian shares closed mostly lower overseas today. Commerce Department said today the government shrank by 1% in the second quarter, better than analysts were expecting. Let's talk about it with Sam Stovall. He's chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research, joining us live from New York. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So you've seen on this less bad equals good beat with us for a while. You've been on that beat for a while. But gosh, Sam, the economy still shrank. I mean, why is that still encouraging?
Well, Steve, it's encouraging because people expected the revised numbers for the second quarter to be even lower than the initial release, expecting it to be down 1.5%, but it's down 1%, which I think gives additional hope that we will see about a 1% growth in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter.
A good bulk of the spending, Sam, that's been going on in the economy is government stimulus. I mean, but that well's going to run dry. Will the economy be healthy enough at that point to keep up?
I think that's the government's hope, and that's our expectation. I think what the government is doing right now is putting lighter fluid on the charcoal briquettes and hoping that they will be able to ignite and retain that flame on their own into 2010.
And we also found out this morning, Sam, that fewer people filed for unemployment benefits last week. Is that enough to make any significant difference?
Well, we're still on the road to recovery, and I think any additional sign that allows us to mature from green shoots into young saplings is positive.
Sam Stovall joining us from New York. Sam, thanks.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. For consumers, prices for things such as groceries or school supplies haven't been on the rise much, but food prices could be edging up soon. That word from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman filed this report.
It's nice to know that Walmart checks other stores' prices to make sure I save on everything we need this summer.
Summer may cost less at Walmart, but its price is actually down everywhere. Milk is averaging $2.99 a gallon, down a dollar from a year ago. Beef and eggs are also sharply lower. We can thank the recession, which has weakened consumer demand, plus a steep drop in energy prices. But Gus Fauché of Moody'sEconomy.com says that trend is over.
Farmers are going to be paying more for fuel, for fertilizer. That's going to increase their cost,
which they'll pass on to consumers. So food prices will likely edge up 2 to 3% for the year. But Fauché says the rest of the stuff we buy may not go up at all.
It's very difficult for firms to raise prices. People just don't have the income. They're still trying to boost their savings. And so they aren't spending as much. And I think that that's going to be, to some extent, a permanent change.
A change that may be good for consumers, but could drag economic growth down for some time to come. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, August 27th, 2009, at marketplace.org. So what does the auto industry of the future look like? Greener, more fuel efficient, and perhaps dominated by Asian auto companies? The Department of Transportation just released its telling top 10 lists for the Cash for Clunkers program, and Marketplace's Steve Henn breaks it down.
Okay, so here's a quick rundown of the top 10 vehicles Americans traded in under the Cash for Clunkers program. Ford Explorer grabbed the top spot, followed by a Ford pickup, then a Jeep, another Ford, a couple Chevys. You get the idea. It was an all-American sweep of junked gas guzzlers. So what were people buying? Toyota took three of the top 10 spots, with Corolla winning the sales race. But not a single model made by GM or Chrysler cracked the top 10. Ford was the only domestic automaker to make the list with its Focus and Escape models. The Department of Transportation was quick to point out that most of the top-selling models are actually made in the U.S., and it credits clunkers with saving 42,000 jobs. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
According to a report out this week, the value of all taxable property in California fell for the first time since the Great Depression. That means even less money for the deficit-plagued Golden State. Sounds like a good time to hold a garage sale, Marketplace's Sam Eaton reports.
It's Arnold's California Gold Rush Garage Sale, and everything must go. Staplers.
Late night talk shows may be poking fun at California's plans to sell unused state property. But this Jimmy Kimmel skit isn't that far from reality.
$2. A pair of Maria's leg warmers. $8. Signed.
Beginning Friday, bargain hunters can snap up everything from decommissioned highway patrol motorcycles to $5 coat racks and police confiscated jewelry. It's being called the Great California Garage Sale. But UCLA economist Jerry Nicholsberg says when it comes to generating cash, great may not be the best choice of words, even if Governor Schwarzenegger did autograph a few Crown Victoria cruisers.
If it sells for $1,400 instead of $1,000 in a state that just cut $25 billion in spending, it doesn't really matter very much for fiscal policy.
Nicholsberg says what California really needs is economic growth. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
If you think you're dealing with a long, hot summer, try this number out for size. 57. That's how many days the temperature has climbed above 100 degrees in San Antonio, Texas this year. And that record-breaking heat wave is cooking up some high energy bills. From Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies reports.
In Texas, the summer of 2009 will be remembered for high temperatures and high power bills.
We're seeing record prices largely because of high consumption, with people having to run air conditioners just to keep cool, sometimes 24 hours a day.
Randy Chapman of the Texas Legal Services Center says many of the state's power plants burn natural gas, and now natural gas is cheap. So then why are Texas energy bills so expensive?
It's a little like the weather. The climate is not exactly the same all over Texas, and neither are electric prices.
That's Terry Hadley of the Texas Public Utility Commission. He says the power grid in cities like Houston and Dallas are unregulated, and competition drives down prices. But Austin and San Antonio are still regulated. Regulation was a good thing last year when natural gas prices were high. But during this hot summer, customers are stuck with soaring bills. In San Antonio, I'm David Martin Davies for Marketplace.
Britain's top financial regulator is calling for a new global tax on the finance industry, saying that banks and other financial institutions should be cut down to size. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, reports.
The head of the Financial Services Authority seems to take a dim view of the businesses he regulates. Adair Turner describes the financial sector as swollen, making excess profits and paying extravagant bonuses. He says much of what goes on in London's financial centre is socially useless. In a magazine interview out today, Turner makes the case for a global tax on financial transactions to rein in the industry. Forget it, says Stuart Fraser, an ambassador for London's financial district.
The chances of a global tax, I think, are pretty remote. I mean, we live in a very competitive world, and taxation is an important factor as to where businesses reside.
Fraser says other financial centres like Dubai, Singapore and Hong Kong would never adopt the tax. He says they're too keen to make themselves more competitive than London and New York. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Those failures were all smaller banks, but lately the news has been more upbeat from the bigger ones. Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us this morning to talk about how they're doing these days, considering many of them received a lot of taxpayer bailouts. So, Chris, let's start with Citigroup. They say profits are up and we see stock prices getting a boost. What does that say about the banking sector as a whole? And are things really much better?
You know, I think Citi is really a metaphor for the whole economy and the whole bailout. If you go back a year ago, we were staring at the abyss, and the government came in and it bought a 34% stake in Citi. It helped restore that company's fortunes. Now, just like the economy is turning around, so is Citigroup. But we're not going to be reaping any gains anytime soon. There's still a lot of problems at Citi. There's still a lot of toxic assets. Take a look at our economy. Yes, we're doing better. But the housing market, you know, it's stumbling along. A lot of workers are unemployed.
So broadening this a little bit to the other big banks, I mean, these are the very people that caused the problem in the first place. What kind of lesson do they learn if the government, i.e. you and I and everyone else here, come to their rescue every time?
Okay, there's several lessons. First lesson is eventually the banks in Wall Street learned the government will bail us out. Therefore, second lesson is regulators, Obama administration, Congress, you have to change the rules of the game. Otherwise, we're going to be back in the same situation we were before. Maybe it might take 5 years, might take 10 years, but that's the risk.
Change the rules how?
Change the rules that banks cannot take the kinds of risks that they did. You can't have short-term profit motivation with the banking system, and you don't want a situation where a Goldman Sachs can convert itself into a commercial bank for a bailout and then unconvert itself fairly quickly afterwards because the markets are better. That's not good for the taxpayer. It's not good for the economy.
And all that notwithstanding, Chris, do we have a way to see this coming next time, sort of a reliable gauge?
Bubbles are embedded in the optimism of capitalism. If you look back to our history since 1825, that's really when the industrial economy, the sort of business cycle that we now are familiar with, took off. Since that period of time, bubbles have happened. Bubbles are going to happen in the future. That's the warning sign.
Bottom line, were the bailouts a good idea?
Yes, the bailouts were a good idea. The economy is recovering. And frankly, the taxpayer has a profit, or at least looks like the taxpayer has a profit on their investment in the bank bailout.
All right. Economics correspondent Chris Farrell joining us. Chris, thanks.
Thanks.
And finally, the mayor of Los Angeles is in a bit of hot water. Actually, it's cold water. Reports are Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa has been watering his yard too many times a week. See, much of California suffering shortages. And this summer, the city of L.A. imposed a strict two-day-a-week watering schedule. But automatic sprinklers where the mayor lives were spraying on nights other than Mondays and Thursdays. When asked why he didn't hear the sprinklers go off, the mayor told reporters he's a sound sleeper. The problem's fixed, he said, and we can all rest easy. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being here. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.